Hello and welcome to Local Motion. I'm Allie Lightfoot. As part of KVNF's midterm election coverage, we'll be featuring portions of the Club 20 debates over the next few weeks. Club 20 provides a forum for the discussion of controversial issues and works to represent the interests of the Western Slope of Colorado at all levels of government. The group held candidate debates at the Two Rivers Convention Center earlier this month. Today we'll hear from the candidates in Senate District 6, Republican incumbent Don Corum and Democratic candidate Gwynn Unger Jr. Here's Executive Director of Club 20, Christian Reese, to introduce the moderator.
Next, we have Senate District 6, and Senate District 6 begins in Montrose, spans all the way down to the Four Corners area, and stretches over to Archuleta County. Here to moderate the Senate District 6 debate is Club 20 Public Lands and Natural Resources Committee Co-Chair Nancy Fishering.
Good afternoon, and thank you for being here. It's been determined by coin toss that our opening person will be Gwynn Unger Jr., and he will have 2 minutes to make an opening remark, and then Don Corum will follow with his opening statement. And by prior permission, we can call them by their first names. Gwynn, if you'd like to start with your comments.
Thank you. I got into this race because I believe that we're at our best as a state or as a district or as individual communities when we're looking out for one another. And it always kind of surprises me that that kind of notion has become sort of branded as something that only Democrats hold. But I've traveled this whole district, and everywhere I go, that's something that resonates with everyone I talk to. So Senate 6 is a big rural district with a lot of very opinionated, independent-minded people. But everyone agrees that we've got some big problems that have been building up for years, and everyone understands that those problems are impacting each and every one of us in different but very real ways. I entered this race because I believe that in order to address some of these big problems, it's going to take bold steps and a lot of really hard work. When you start stacking up the list of problems that I'm hearing from the voters, the environment, forest fires, water, health care, underfunded schools, and not enough good-paying jobs, when you run through that list, the common theme is that so many of these have been problems for many years, and they've just gotten progressively worse. The reality is that our state government has too often looked at these big problems and at best slapped a Band-Aid on them, or at worst thrown up their hands and said, these problems are too big, there's really nothing we can do. And I just don't have much patience for that. I've been a problem solver my whole life. I served for 28 years in the U.S. Army Reserve. I've worked in the corporate world. I've run 3 small businesses. I worked on the space shuttle design team. I found again and again that the biggest, toughest problems require big thinking, collaboration, and working with people that you might not agree with. So I've been looking forward to this debate. I look forward to getting into these issues, and I thank Club 20 for hosting us here. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, candidate Don, would you have your opening statement?
Absolutely, and I want to thank Club 20 for doing this. This is always a very fun weekend, and I've been here before. This is 5 times that I've been before this group, and I was a House District 58 representative for 6 years, and 2 years ago, I took a vacancy when Senator Roberts resigned. In the 2 years that I've been in the Senate, I have been one of the most active senators there. I'm not one that believes in participation trophies, so I only count the bills that I was the prime sponsor of. In my 2 years in the Senate, I was the prime sponsor of 111 bills. If you take what does Bob Gardner, a moderate from Colorado Springs, Bob and I did 141 of the 721 bills ran this year. How do you do that? Because you build relationships. Everything you do there is recorded, it's remembered. And when you commit to something, you stay with it. You've probably heard earlier in the day other representatives talking about working with Don Corum. That's what I do. On the Natural Resources and Water Committee and Judiciary. And I'm very proud of the record that I've had. I think I've done a lot in job creation. Senator Swartz and I, a few years ago, ran the hemp legislation. This year, it's about an $800 million industry in the state of Colorado. We'll probably go to 1.2, 1.3 next year. The broadband bill is probably the heaviest lift I've ever done, but to use the governor's word, that bill brings oxygen to rural Colorado to provide economic development, and it's probably one of the best things that I've ever done. I've worked a lot on every issue you can imagine. When you run 69 bills in 1 year, you are not limited yourself to the thing that you grew up on the farm about.
Thank you, Don. Now we're going to move to panelists' questions. Our panelists that will ask these questions are Ben Tisdale, Ouray County Commissioner, and Mary Jo Koulian, who's Chamber of Commerce from Pagosa Springs. Each candidate will be asked to respond to four questions from our two member panel. Each candidate will have 1 minute to respond to each question. The candidate who goes first on each question will also have an opportunity to respond with a 30-second rebuttal to the other candidate's response. The candidate that went first in opening remarks will offer the first response to the first question. Question number one.
Okay, this is the first question. The district you hope to represent includes communities that share many similarities, but also have significant differences in demographics, economic drivers, transportation needs, and other differences. Given these differences, how do you propose to best represent the diverse constituencies of this district?
So I think this is common. No matter where you are, you have different constituencies. And so you have to make decisions that are really in the best interest of the overall group. And that means that you have to represent everyone in that district. And so as you do these things, that's really the hard part. The easy part is deciding, well, you know, I'd like to go off and do thus and such. But when it comes right down to it, when you're having to represent people that are liberal, people that are conservative, people that are rich, people that are poor, you've got to do things that really make sense for everybody. So that's really the trick, and that's, you know, what we all have to concentrate on is finding a way to do something that overall benefits everybody in the district. So that's what I would work at, that's what I would try to do, and I think that's what makes for a good politician or a good representative, good senator, is to do exactly that.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you. That's a great question, and I don't have to try because I have done. I have a record, and my record is because of communication and trust. I think one of my favorite things I got from Senate Minority Leader Guzman when she left, she sent me a card. She said, "The only thing that I will miss about the Senate is not working with you on good bills." And I think that's what you have to do, is work together and communicate with it. Everybody you can't make everybody happy, but you ought to also have to give them a fair hearing of what their concerns are. Tell them why you agree, or tell them why you don't agree, and try to work on a common ground. And that's what I've done for 8 years, and I stand on that very proudly.
Thank you, and we have a 30-second rebuttal.
So I've heard a lot of people here talking about bipartisan bills and how they work across the aisle. Frankly, when you've got a Republican-controlled Senate and a Democratic-controlled House, these bills have to be bipartisan in order to get through. So, you know, that's clearly something that has to happen. And even if one party controlled both houses, I think it would be very valuable to all of us if we still tried to be bipartisan and make sure that we're getting as much agreement as possible on these things.
Thank you. Our next question.
Does the state have a role in providing assistance to hemp farmers? If so, what should that assistance look like?
Well, I don't think they do have a role. Senator Schwartz and I created that legislation on the regulatory side, and that's what we do. We want to keep an industry that is fair and equal, but I don't think the state should be subsidizing the industry. It's a lucrative business that I think has a great deal of potential to put young people back on the farm. And frankly, the prices are good enough We're not on 1984 farm prices for corn, wheat, and potatoes. It is a very lucrative market, and if you are prepared to go in and do the right thing and do it right, you will be successful. If you're looking for a government handout to bail you out, I'm not in favor of that. I don't think it's needed and should never be done.
Thank you. Wynn?
I certainly agree that when you have a private business that's profitable, that doesn't need the subsidies, that can make it on its own, there's no reason at all for the government at the state level or the national level to get involved in that sort of thing. So I totally agree with that in this case. Now, I do think there are some times where the state has a role in trying to jumpstart something. And so there may be situations you can say that long term, this is a strong private business, but short term, it needs a little bit of support. And if you look at some of the countries around the world, you know, that's what they do. They support industries initially, and then they let them go off and be private. So in general, I would like to keep away from state subsidies for private businesses, but there may be some instances where it makes sense for the state to help something get started.
Well, I think, to be specific, in 2013, we passed the legislation. In 2014, 200 acres of hemp were grown in Colorado. Last year, 14,000 acres of hemp was permitted. This year, 29,000 acres is permitted. So, frankly, it's something that that doesn't need a handout. And frankly, I don't want it. You have a right to fail in this business or any other. And we don't need this in this particular industry.
Thank you. We're ready for our next question.
Okay. Next question is, energy production is an important economic driver for our communities on Colorado's western slope. Do you support an all-of-the-above energy policy? And for you, what does this look like?
So I think the answer is a little more complicated than just a yes or no. I mean, clearly, if we could continue to produce oil and gas and burn coal and it didn't have any detrimental effects, then I would definitely be in favor of an all-of-the-above policy. But we know that burning coal in particular is having very, very bad results in terms of climate. Coal is a very dirty fuel. It's dirty to mine, it's dirty to transport, it's dirty to burn, and it puts a ton of carbon dioxide into the air. So the question sort of becomes, you know, do we want to continue to do that, meanwhile driving global temperatures up and causing climate change? And so I say we need to move to a clean energy future as rapidly as we can. In the meantime, I want to keep driving my car. So I still want to see oil and gas production. I want to continue to heat my house. So that's the kind of thing that we need to do. But we definitely need to move to a clean energy future as quickly as we can.
Don?
Thank you. And, you know, I'm going to remind the members that the only constant we have is change. I know the Anasazis left Southwest Colorado 800 years ago. I don't think it was because of a Ford. It may have been a Chevy. I'm not sure. I drive Fords. But we need the all-of-the-above energy program, and we need to develop a program using the economics of it. We need to create jobs. And if we can use clean coal technology, our gas, oil and gas industry has the best regulations in the state. I'm all for solar, I'm for wind, and I'm absolutely sure that you cannot have a healthy economy or a healthy environment without a healthy economy. And so we need to be very, very careful, because in my 8 years in the General Assembly, I have found that we are the land of unintended consequences. And I don't want to jump into something nilly-willy and say, damn, we shouldn't
have
done that.
Thank you, Don. And rebuttal, please.
So, I mean, one of the great things about this when we start talking about renewables is the price of renewables is coming down so fast that you can ask yourself, do you want clean or do you want cheap? And there's far more renewable jobs in solar and wind and so on than there are coal jobs. So if your concern is the economy, then it makes sense to go to renewables because it's cheaper. I serve on the LPEA board, and we're looking at this all the time. The cost of renewables is coming way down. So it's a win-win. We get clean energy, and we get cheaper energy, and we drive the economy.
Thank you. We're moving to question four.
What are the top issues facing the district as you see it, and how do you plan to address these issues?
Well, thank you very much. And I think I said in my opening comments, the broadband bill, I think, was a huge, huge effort to bring jobs to the economy. One of our big issues that we need to address is healthcare. And I worked with Lieutenant Governor Donna Lynn on legislation to bring transparency into the healthcare industry. I worked with that with Senator Smallwood. I worked several things with Democrat Finberg. And I think it's just important that we sit down and have those conversations, because we've been kicking the can down the road a long time. And the Affordable Care Act has been atrocious. I have a family or a member that's 59 years old. They do not qualify for subsidies. They're paying $2,940 a month for health care. If you reverse that and they are able to spend money in the economy, it will certainly help that, rather than making a choice of, do I pay my mortgage or do I buy health insurance?
So from my point of view, health care is number one. In all the polls and so on that people talk about, health care is number one, because it's an absolutely critical thing. We pay prices here. I was talking to a lady a couple of weeks ago. Her son moved from Denver to Durango. His premiums doubled. So we're paying very high premiums here on the Western Slope compared to the Front Range. So one of the things I would really like to see is a bill that says, if you're going to sell health insurance in this state, you have to sell it in every county at the same price, so that we don't have these huge disparities. Education. Two things on education. One, obviously, we want to educate our kids. That's important, so they can get good jobs. The other thing is that if you have subpar schools in your community, businesses are not going to relocate there, because that's something that they look at when they say, do I want to relocate into this area? And if the schools are not good, if the teachers have to work two or three extra jobs in order to be able to make ends meet, you're not going to get these companies that are moving in that are paying higher paying jobs. So those, you know, those things are very important, and we need to invest.
Thank you.
Rebuttal. Thank you, and I think education is great. I wish more people would run for the state or for the local school board, because the state does not dictate the salary to teachers. The 174 school districts do that. We put about $13,000 into education per student. That's 40% of our budget. And so I think it's up to you as citizens of the community to get involved and determine what you can do. In my own town of Montrose, the neighboring Ridgeway, we have two of the top performing schools in the state.
Thank you, Don. Sorry. This was concludes the panelist section. I want to thank our panelists, Ben and Mary Jo. And now we'll move to the section of cross-examination. In this part, each candidate will be given 4 minutes to ask questions of their opponent on matters pertaining to the race or office. Candidate Don Corum will begin the cross-examination, and then we'll follow by Gwen. Thank you, Don.
Thank you. Last night you were offered one of my bumper stickers, and now that you've had the opportunity to sleep overnight, have you made a decision to go ahead and put it on?
No, I'm still thinking about it, Don.
All right, that's very good. You know, I think that, and I have not known Gwen long, but I think he's a very honorable man, and I appreciate the service that you've done. But I know that you are a huge supporter of single payer health care, and how we as a state and as a nation, how can we pay for that?
I'm really glad you asked that question, actually, because when you look at something like a Medicare for All plan, it's actually going to be much cheaper. There are other countries that have that kind of plan that spend half as much per person as we do. So our system is not only totally screwed up, but we're paying way more than we ought to be paying. Even the last estimate that came out of $32 trillion over 10 years is still $2 to $4 trillion less than we're going to spend if we don't do anything. So this whole idea that this is just going to cost us huge amounts of money is crazy, and there is no justification for that point of view at all.
Thank you. I hope you're right. My other question in the oil and gas industry, that is number one, number two in the state of Colorado, and I certainly support your wish for more renewables. But how, as we as a state and as communities that rely on that severance tax, how are we going to fund the things that we're funding now because we have a vibrant oil and gas industry? I think we're number 5 in the nation in oil production. So how do you replace that income?
So I think initially we're not talking about getting rid of oil and gas tomorrow. It's something that's going to happen when we get to total renewables in 2040 or 2050. So we will have those severance taxes, we'll have the royalties and so on that are coming in for the next 10, 15, 20, 25 years, and we need to then prepare so that when the time comes that we've got other sources of revenue for those severance taxes. And this is going to happen. It's not something that we can decide we want it to happen or we don't want it to happen, because again, the price of renewables is coming down. This is something I've tried to tell the LPEA people. As the cost of solar comes down, people are going to move away from us. They're not going to pay us these higher prices that we're charging them. It's the same thing in terms of oil and gas. As we go to electric vehicles, as we start using more electricity, clean energy at lower prices, the oil and gas is going to go away. And we don't have any choice about that. We can't stop that. So we've got to plan for it so that when we get into the future, we've got other sources of revenue.
Could you describe what that revenue is? I would love to know that.
Well, I don't know what it is exactly. I mean, there could very well be some things that we would tie to clean energy production. Maybe we tax that in some way so that we make up some of that revenue. When we're trying to figure out what the revenue sources are going to be 25, 30 years from now, that's kind of a big lift to talk about that, because things are going to be totally different and we don't know exactly what it's going to be. But we will have to work out other sources of revenue to replace that, because it's going away, folks. It's not going to stick around regardless of what Don wants or what I want or any of you want.
I have a bill titled for funding of the Colorado Water Plan. What can you add funding for that for me?
I think this kind of gets back to the old idea that are we just spending money or are we investing money? And so there may be some situations where we have to raise taxes so that we can make these critical investments, not just spending money for the sake of spending, but something like the Colorado Water Plan.
Thank you. Now, candidate Gwynn, it's your turn to do the 4 minutes cross-examination of Don.
All right, thank you. Don, back in 2014, SB 14192 was a bill that would require that when a uranium mine or some other operation that releases radioactive materials and contaminates the groundwater on somebody's property, that the party responsible would be required to restore the groundwater to, at a minimum, the level required to safely comply with the historical use. I don't know if you remember that bill or not, but according to the records that I've seen, you advocated and voted against that bill. Is that correct?
I believe that is correct, and the reason is Colorado Department of Mining and Safety does a very good job of doing this. I'm in the mining industry, and I'm going to tell you, in the past we made some huge mistakes, but it was brought on by the federal government because of the uranium issue. They wanted to keep from speaking German and Japanese. We made mistakes, but we've also come back and corrected that. I do environmental remediation. My one and only customer is U.S. Department of Energy, but we also have a very, very stringent and often reviewed bonding requirement on those properties.
So why would you have been against this bill? How would it have negatively impacted what you're talking about?
Because you were trying to say this is going to be X amount, and it would be additional costs that you were trying to put on above and beyond what the department has said is necessary.
So along those same lines, I want to ask you a little bit about your advocacy for industrial hemp. You told the Montezuma Daily Press the other day that they call you Senator Hemp, right?
That's correct.
And you've been an advocate for paving the way for industrial hemp in Colorado?
In the nation.
My concern here is that on those two issues, in the case of remediating uranium mines, you own uranium mines. In the case of pushing hemp, you're a big player in the hemp market. So isn't it fair that your constituents would be a little bit concerned about the fact that you're working on bills that really are benefiting you?
Well, I've been in the General Assembly long enough to realize that there's 100 amateurs making professional decisions. And we rely on doctors to give us information on healthcare. We rely on lawyers to give us information on what is good law. We deal with motor carriers and transportation. I see nothing wrong with having an expert in the field kind of leading that charge. Perhaps you do.
All right, well, let me shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about climate change. So do you believe that climate change is happening and that it's being driven by human activity, primarily the burning of fossil fuels?
Well, I believe that the only constant we have is change. I said that earlier. The Anasazis left here 800 years ago. It wasn't fossil fuels. It might have been volcanoes. It might have been forest fires.
So that's all fine, but let's talk about climate change. The fact is that this has been an unprecedented change in climate. There was a Scientific American article a few years ago that said the last time that the CO2 levels and the temperature were this high, it took 20,000 years to change that. And that's the same amount as changed in the last 150 years. So yes, the climate changes according to all sorts of different reasons. In this case, it's pretty darn clear that it's human activity and putting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere.
Well, I think carbon dioxide is, I'm also a farmer and a rancher, and carbon dioxide is vital for plant growth. If you want to eliminate carbon dioxide immediately, that's worse than the Bobby Sands diet.
I don't think anybody wants to eliminate carbon dioxide. I think we're trying to keep the levels down to where we're not heating up the planet and destroying the climate.
Well, I have friends in Kansas right now that are
suffering. Excuse me, we need to stop the part of cross-examination. It was very robust, good detail. And so now we're going to move to closing remarks. Each candidate will have 2 minutes to present their closing remarks. We'll begin with Don Korm.
Thank you very much, and it has been an honor to serve Club 20 and the residents of rural Colorado. I've often said, and it's been quoted many times, the R behind my name stands for rural. And totally believe that only the dead fish go with the flow. It is not always easy to do the right thing, but it is always right. And my voting record will show that I have been very, very student in looking at what best represents Southwest Colorado and all of rural Colorado. I'm just as concerned about my friends on the Eastern Plains. They're suffering immensely because of agricultural prices. They have too little rain, and then all of a sudden they have too much. I got a friend called from Lamar yesterday, said they've had 12 inches of rain in the last week. Yeah, that's climate change. But, it's something that we deal with, and I think my relationship in the House, in the Senate, you cannot sponsor 10% of the legislation without having a trust from the other side. And I'm very proud of that trust, and I work hard at it. I have my aide of 51 years that has been there with me. It's been something that I'm very proud of, because when I'm not able to go somewhere, she can, and just because I'm not there doesn't mean that you aren't being heard, you aren't being represented, because I rely on her, I rely on members of Club 20 to be my ears and the boots on the ground for what needs to be done to serve Colorado best. And I ask for your support.
Thank you, Dawn. Gwen, you now have 2 minutes to give closing remarks.
Thank you. When I first got into this campaign, Barbara McLaughlin, who's the state rep for 59, said, you need to join Club 20. And I said, well, I've always heard that Club 20 was a really ultra-conservative group. And do I really want to do that? And she said, yes, you do. So a couple of months ago, I went to the committee meetings in Lake City. And what I found was that Club 20 is really a very issues-oriented group. And yes, there's a lot of conservative people in there, but there's liberal people too. And this is a group that really does advocate for the Western Slope. I think that there's some big differences between the way Don Korm approaches things and the way I approach them. Much of what you heard him talking about is short term. Okay, hemp, oil and gas, those kinds of things. The things you heard me talking about are longer term. And what happens when we just pay attention to the short term? Then the longer term catches us by surprise. because we're not looking out there. We're not trying to make decisions about where are we going to be 20 years from now? Where are we going to be 30 years from now? And I have this same conversation, frankly, at La Plata Electric Association, where I'm on the board. And we've got to be looking out. The world is changing around us, and it's changing faster and faster and faster. So if we don't look out into the future and say, where are we going to be 10 years from now? Where are we going to be 20 years from now? We can't find out exactly, obviously. We don't know exactly where we're going to be. But we need to take a best guess and say, this is where we think we're going to be, and these are the kinds of things that we can do to make sure that everybody has the best life possible when we get to that time. So I believe that I would be able to better represent Senate District 6 than Senator Quorum can, or I wouldn't be running for this. So I just want to let you know that there is a difference here, and it's important that people look at what the two candidates stand for and vote for the person that they think can best represent everyone in the Senate district. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Club 20 Debates, featuring a debate between the candidates running in Senate District 6, Republican incumbent Don Quorum and Democratic challenger Gwynne Unger Jr. Stay tuned to KVNF for more election coverage in the following weeks. Thank you for listening to Local Motion on KVNF. I'm Allie Lightfoot.